One thing I did want to see, I haven't got any confirmation as to what happened to Sky at the bottom of the final climb. Was it a mechanical? Let's assume it was a mechanical and everyone did their thing where they wait for Froome. What is this team with this such a huge budget? Why do they have so many mechanicals? This happened all during the Tour de France. I mean, at some point, these other teams need to realize Froome is just dicking with them and you just need to ride on. If you and your buddy, if your buddy joins your group ride and he's constantly having a flat, he's losing his Di2 battery, or it's going dead, or he's got a broken spoke, at some point, you just like not wait for him or her anymore. You just say, screw this. I mean, get a better mechanic, maybe better product, or suffer the consequences. Hello and welcome. Episode 9 of the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is Tyler Yonke, your host. August 23, 2017. Hope everyone's doing fine. Thought we'd do a little signings and happenings from around the world of cycling, some news that's going on, then do some recap of stage 4 and 5 of the Vuelta a España, and a little bit of 6, 7, maybe 8, 9 preview of the stages upcoming. A few things we have on note here, and I've tried to tweet these out at T Yonke, that's T-J-A-N-K-E on Twitter, a few little things that we've had. TJ Van Garderen has been reported to be staying with BMC for 2018. Looks like it's just a one-year contract. It had been reported by Daniel Freib of ITV and Cycling Podcast that he was, oh, and he's also an author of a great Eddie Merckx book that you should check out and read by Daniel Freib. The TJ was actually been courted by Sky. That's been squelched and put down, and it looks like TJ's signing back with BMC. And we'll talk more about him today as he was an instigator in the stage 5. News of note, another one, Kiel Reinen is staying with Trek Segafredo for the next 2 years. I guess he signed back with them. I'm also seeing somewhere online, I saw today where he got fifth in a race. I'm not sure which race that was, or I believe it was fifth though. So good for him. Good to see another American making it on the World Tour. Locally, we have Cole Davis. I believe he was the U17-18 national champion this last year. He rides here locally in the Sacramento area, comes on our group rides. He was a national champion, like I said, in our own data-driven athletes. Charlie Velez was on the podium in third this year as well, both good local riders. And anyway, Cole Davis has been signed for Action Hagens Berman for next year, so it's kind of cool to see him make that jump up. I know Action is looking, I don't know if they're trying to up their continental level, but they're obviously a team that does really well. So we got two good locals, Nilsson Paulus and Cole Davis, kind of on the upswing, and nice kids, and good to see things happening with them. This last weekend, we had the Northern California State Road Race Championships. Actually, they call it District because they do split up the North and the South of California. But it was won by Ari Akiani, the University Road Race in Santa Cruz, of Team Mike's Bikes. He's actually coached as well by a data-driven athlete coach, Sam Bassetti, I believe. That race, if you ever get a chance to do it, you better be able to go uphill. It's probably the toughest road race in Northern California. You know, Nate Dunn, the data-driven athlete, they did post, if you go to his website and his Facebook, there's a little article up about the race, and I think they show some data of what Aria had to do. So impressive win. And congrats to him. Should be wearing a Cal Bear on his back for this next year. And that's impressive. And congratulations. All right, let's jump into the results that we had the other day. So stage 4, Escaldes to Tarragona, 198 kilometers. It was, as we expected, a day for the sprinters. We had a break. They caught the break. The sprinters queued up. Quick Step took the win. They're the only one that seemed to really have a concentrated train. So it was very much like what they had done in the Tour de France, and it looked good. There were some crashes along the way, though. The most ill-timed one was Domenico Pozzovivo. He came down just inside the last three, or just outside the last 3 kilometers, so he didn't get that reprieve of the 3 km buffer zone. So he ended up losing several minutes along the way. I've also saw where he is signing next year for Bahrain Merida, which is Nibali's team. So they're trying to up their quality on that team as well. Anyway, the last finishing 2 kilometers were somewhat intriguing. There are lots of corners. They even had over 90 degree. It looks like they came into a roundabout and then kind of took the extra addition onto that. And they all led them through one direction. Quick Step sprinter, at least at the they didn't really have any sprinters, but Mateo Trentin is kind of their man. He's obviously good in comparison to anybody else here at the Vuelta. He easily won over Juan Jose Lobato of Lotto NL Jumbo, and then Tom Van Asbroek of Cannondale Drapac. Trentin just kind of sat back, let the Lotto Jumbo guy take the lead, and then just came around him. Clear wheels, easy win, nice post up. There was some daylight in between first, second, third, and then even to fourth. Apparently, there's some illness going around already in the Vuelta. It looks like Ben King of Dimension Data had to drop out. John Degenkolb had been sick. That's why he wasn't up there in the finish of this one. And subsequently today, I've read where he's also abandoned. You also had Contador getting sick. And we'll talk about that for, we had seen that the previous day where he didn't have the legs. And so he has been feeling under the weather. So it looks like there's kind of a disruption. I don't know if it's in the Trek camp or what. But speaking of Contador being sick, I heard an interview with Peter Stettina prior to the stage four. And he was discussing, you know, how he was honored to be helping Contador and he wished that he was setting him up for an attack rather than just kind of bringing him back to the group. And then he also said that something wasn't right with Contador and it wasn't just his legs, but he felt pretty positive that Contador would be bouncing back. And then the interviewer questioned him and said, well, what exactly was wrong with Contador? And Peter easily dodged the question, just saying, oh, maybe it was the heat. I'm not sure. But I heard this clip, this interview, after having already read a story about Contador being sick and indicating that he admitted basically that he had a stomach problem. And that was the issue. What is funny about this is, you know, you expect this maybe from politicians, but you see this all the time in cycling. Someone's obviously not doing well. Something's wrong. And so they don't want to give any credit or wedge issue type of thing to their opponents. So they him and ha around it. And so you had Stettina here saying, oh, well, you know, something wasn't wrong. Well, then when pushed, what was wrong? Well, he's not going to say, and well, I think he'll be okay. When in the meantime, Contador is actually saying, well, I had a stomach problem. And the team knows he's got a stomach problem. I don't know. Maybe is it okay to say that? I know Peter wasn't his place to be doing that, but it is a little silly, in my opinion, to be balking at just saying what the actual thing. Do you think it makes a difference? Oh, we've got Contador. He's not feeling well. I'm gonna attack. Well, you're gonna attack anyway. And if he's okay, he's gonna come with you. And if he's not, he's not. Maybe I'm just reaching into that. Stage four finished into Tarragona and there was an interesting note there. They had made a comment about it. Xavier Tondo, or Xavi Tondo, as they call him, he'd grown up there. He'd been born there, and he had died in 2011. So there was some mention of that. And you could go online and read about it. But basically, it was a really freak accident. I think he was in his garage, and like the parking brake came undone in the car and pinned him. This little climber guy pinned him between the garage door and the car, and it must have done obviously a lot of damage because he died. That was back in 2011, so that was pretty sad. And you never know when the Grim Reaper's coming your direction. But anyway, just interesting note for that stage. All right, so we had stage five, Benicàssim to Emerita Santa Lucia, 176 kilometers. This was a break of about 17. They got out, and David Villilla of the Cannondale Drapac team, he's already wearing the polka dot jersey. He was apt to basically want to take all these KOMs. There's, five categorized climbs along the way, and he already had the blue and white polka dot jersey. That's the blue and white that they have for the Vuelta. Gobbled up all the KOMs, getting the maximum points for the first four climbs. Meanwhile, the break edged to about 4 minutes, and then they were stretching it out to about five, and it appeared around the 50-kilometer mark that Sky was actually going to start working and bringing it back. But as soon as they went over that second-to-last climb, Sky kind of backed off. The lead was hovering in that four-minute range. They backed off, and it coincided at the same time with the break having some attacks in it and kind of splitting that thing up. Villilla, you never saw him again, at least at the pointy end of the race, and you saw a Katusha guy take off from the front, and Haller was his name, and he's not a sprinter, but he took off on this descent. Soon he was joined by Lutsenko and another guy, I'm trying to remember, he was a Emirates rider, and then he got dropped. And anyway, then behind there, the break was fragmenting up a little bit, and you had the Dimension Data climber Kudos, and then Gugard of the AG2R. They were hovering about 20 to 30 seconds, and they didn't make connection with the Lutsenko and Haller. Haller, oddly enough, you know, like a big, not a climber at all. He's a big guy, and he kept kept helping out. Well, first there was some back and forth with Lutsenko and him trying to make pace, but then he decided to join in and he helped out up until the beginning, the finishing climb, which was about 3 kilometers to the finish. Anyway, meanwhile, the main group behind was just spread across the road, queuing up for the final climb. And it was much like you'd see sprint trains. So you're seeing all colors of Dimension Data, all colors of Cannondale Drapac, Trek, Sky, all lined up, ready for their leaders coming into the front. Okay, so we hit the final climb, and Lutsenko easily just drops Haller immediately on the climb. And behind him, you had Kudus, and he dropped his riding partner as well. They had about a 43-second deficit at the bottom of the climb, and this little climber guy, Kudus, it looked like, hey, maybe he's going to be able to catch him. But you know, there's only 2.5 kilometers by the time he cuts that, and he's got, and Lutsenko is looking pretty strong up front. So he ends up about 2K to go, cutting the lead to down to about 38 seconds, and he's still out of the saddle, sprinting, looking good. But the road has some steep pitches, but it also has a few little flatter sections. That's where Lutsenko just kind of drills it again, because he's just a little more of a bulkier power rider over the little climber. Comes into the last 1K, and there's some steep sections, and Lutsenko looks like he starts laboring. Matter of fact, it almost looks like he starts weaving across the road. He's looking back. Kudus comes through there. He looks like he's inside about 35 seconds, and I'm thinking he might be able to catch him. The crowd was really big on this climb. The slope itself was really steep, and it was a good atmosphere for this. And the road then started to tip a little flatter inside the last kilometer, which helped the Astana rider. Kudus couldn't quite get it, but then it kicks back up at the end with a nice steep pitch right before the finish, and Lutsenko ended up locking it up, and he didn't blow up at that point. Kudus came in around 42 seconds back, so he didn't really gain any time on Lutsenko up the finishing climb. While this is happening, they ended up, you know, 4.5 minutes or so ahead of the peloton. So the camera's trying to do both, go back and forth. And there were some bad moments there of filming where you just saw nothing. Kind of the cameraman's on the front of the race, and he pulls away, and there's switchbacks, and he pulls away so much you can't see any of the race. So it's kind of hard to see some of it. But back in the peloton, let's regroup and see what happened there. So they're starting in for the climb, and as the cameras pan back, you see just BMC at the front. And then the cameras scroll through from the up above, and you don't see any Team Sky. You have Menchies, Chavez, Contador, Mike Woods, Nibali, and BMC right on the front, but you didn't see Sky. So it seems Sky, maybe they had a mechanical again, because suddenly the cameras goes back up to the front group, and then they come back, and now everything's amassed at the front, and it's with Froome again. So Froome's there, Sky's there, and then Moscon just basically starts working his magic on the climb for Team Sky. Moscon is the only rider actually of Team Sky bar Froome until inside the one last kilometer. And you know, maybe there's something to be. I heard other commentators talking the other day about Sky when Froome attacked, that he didn't have anybody left with him. Well, he was attacking, you know, just very close to the top of the climb, so it doesn't really matter. And at this point, you know, if they're timing it just right, it's like a lead out. You don't need your lead out guy to come across the finish line with your sprinter. He needs to get that guy to, you know, 300, 250 to go when that guy snaps. And you've got Moscon, only one, with about, you know, inside a kilometer. That's pretty good for Froome. So anyway, Sky ramps up the tempo. There's other favorites. Some people are getting popped off. You got early guys is Bardet and Pozzovivo get popped out the 1K to go. But then the main group you have is Chavez, Contador. Contador's his stomach issues must be getting over. Nibali is still there, TJ, Zakarin. As they go through about 500 meters, you start to see a group of just, what, 4 or 5 left. Now you've got Contador, TJ, Van Garderen. You got Woods, Froome, and Chavez. And no Nibali, no Aru. And then inside the last 100 to go, TJ actually gets a little bit distance. It pops over the what they call the KOM about inside it, right around 100 meters, and then it's a little descent or flat, and then it kind of pitches back up. And that's where TJ pops off. So over the finish line, you ended up with Contador, Froome, Woods, and Chavez. They all came together 4:31 behind the day's winner. TJ falls just 8 seconds off, and then there's a bigger group behind him with Kelderman, Aru, you got the Yates brothers, you have Nicholas Roach coming in right there. But then there was the gaps of a little bit more significance, where you had Nibali, the chicken of Messina is what I'm going to start calling him, because you know that the shark fin's on the back. It's not on the head. So maybe it's like a more like a chicken. Chicken and Messina. You have Pulse of Vivo and Bardet. So anyway, Nibali came in 26 back. Pulse of Vivo and Bardet are almost a minute back behind Froome. So some of the highlights from today. We had the breakaway, stay away, and a non-GC guy hung on. And somewhat of a daring and impressive finish, especially taking that he had launched out somewhere around the 30K to go. The crowds on the finish were pretty impressive to watch as well. And it was, for the most part, a pretty exciting race to see with the breakaway gone and then Villela of Cannondale pretty much trying to get all the KOMs, at least gave some, and he was getting a little opposition on some of them, but he was taking them. So you at least get an action all day on the top of these climbs, and he ended up getting maximum points. He'll still be in the KOM jersey. One thing I did want to see, I haven't got any confirmation as to what happened to Sky at the bottom of the final climb. Was it a mechanical? Let's assume it was a mechanical and everyone did their thing where they wait for Froome. What is this team with this such a huge budget? Why do they have so many mechanicals? This happened all during the Tour de France. I mean, at some point, these other teams need to realize Froome is just dicking with them and you just need to ride on. If you and your buddy, if your buddy joins your group ride and he's constantly having a flat, he's losing his Di2 battery, or it's going dead, or he's got a broken spoke, at some point, you just like not wait for him or her anymore, and you just say, screw this. I mean, get a better mechanic, maybe better product, or suffer the consequences. When are these teams going to realize that having a mechanical is simply part of racing, and that having a bike, wheels, and the mechanic that keeps these expensive products in working order, I mean, that's all part of a vital process to their success. Get over it. Attack when these guys have it. At some point, Froome needs to, I don't know, tubeless tires. I don't know what. Now, I could be all wrong and I need to retract all this because maybe he didn't have a mechanical. Maybe his positioning was bad. Either way, I'm tired of the mechanical weight stuff. Just please get over that. All right. Kudos of Dimension Data. He's an African from Eritrea. And it was impressive to see him take off and do his best to try to get Lutsenko out the van. He just narrowly missed out, and it would have been a much deserved victory and obviously a desired one as well. It's great to see that there's several Eritreans coming to the fore in cycling lately. I don't know if you know anything about Eritrea, but it has an interesting modern history and with its struggle for independence and this war with Ethiopia dating all the way back to the 1950s. And I do know a little bit for the fact that one of my best friends starting in seventh grade had been from Ethiopia, Eritrea. And so I grew up with this, some of this knowledge of this back and forth. Anyway, so back in the 1970s, Ethiopia was taken over by this Marxist-Leninist dictator who basically instituted a whole communist state, essentially making Ethiopia and Eritrea like a Soviet satellite. So you had a lot of time from the 70s all the way up through, 1993, that Eritrea is trying to make its independence. As a result of this authoritarian, devastating effects of the Soviet-style communism, Ethiopia, they featured prominently in the 1980s for their famine and the starving children. I'm sure you've seen those kind of videos and commercials that used to be on TV. And they say that it affected upwards of a million deaths, like 8 million people were affected, but there were over a million deaths from this. Anyway, so as I said, my friend ended up coming to America with this whole family and a much better life here as well. And the good news is Eritrea had actually claimed its independence in 1993, but they had this nasty fight with Ethiopia again back in 1998 up through 2000, another civil war with them causing a bunch of deaths. So there's several riders that are coming out of the African continent and several that are coming out of Eritrea specifically. I don't know what it is. I mean, my friend, he was a fantastic runner and good at every single sport. So just, I don't know if they just, some sort of breeding that goes on there where you've got these top aerobic athletes, but it's pretty exciting and good to see. And I was really excited to see him today. Kudos, make a good attempt at it. Red whistles. So Trek posted a picture online of Contador finishing the race right after the race. He had a red whistle on, and this, I guess this is what Contador does. He rides back down the hill after a stage finish like this, and he blows his whistle the whole time, blaring his whistle. I don't know if you remember during the Tour de France, Taylor Finney had reported about something that's happening as well with Contador coming past him, where he thought he had a binky sucker in his mouth, and he was blowing on it. He was basically telling all the people on the hill to get out of his way. Kind of weird, but that's what Contador is doing on his swan song tour. top GC highlights from today. Froome is obviously on form. He looks really superb. He came into the tour obviously looking, maybe he's too hot though. I don't know if his fitness came in where he's just like already peaked. So he may need to be worrying about that just a little bit, because there's, I think he might be, because he's getting all these little time bonuses. He's doing everything he can to eke out every second. And so maybe he's just stacking up the advantage while he can. He does have a 40K TT in stage 16 that he can bank on. But look at the guys in the top with him there. I mean, as of right now, you only have maybe TJ Van Garderen and Contador. And who knows what he'll be doing. But who could possibly contend with him on the TT? So as long as Froome doesn't lose time, that TT'd in his back pocket, he's looking pretty good at this point. Chavez. I'm loving to see Chavez and never seen him ride so good. He's had a tough year with some injuries. He also lost a close friend, his soigneur, I guess, during the Tour de France, died. So seeing him back at kind of last year's Vuelta stature, it's pretty cool to see. That TT on stage 16 might be his Achilles heel, however. So it'll be interesting to see when some of these little more lengthy climbs, a little more determining climbs come in, to see how he'll stack up. But right now he is on the wheel of Froome. I haven't seen a bit of daylight and he looks really smooth. Contador, he came back to life and seemingly came through his little stomach issues. I'm glad to see this, and I do like the way he attacks anyway. So it'll be good to see him put more pressure on Sky and Froome from those random attacks. That old whistle-blowing Pistolero, good to see him back. And TJ Van Garderen, he's back too. I mean, stage five fits him that well with these steeper little ramps and kickers on the shorter climb. But I think he came through it like a champ. He only got distance at the very top and it was quite impressive. Maybe he has no pressure on him, so his head's more right for the game. I think that's part of his issue. Last time, was it during the Tour de France when he came all undone? Was it the Giro? And when he came all undone, he said he signed all off of in social media. He wasn't logging on, or I think he deleted his Facebook and his Twitter account. That to me is a guy that's got his head in the wrong spot. You've got to get past those things. I mean, you're a professional athlete. You're in a public, quite a high atmosphere of who you are. You get paid really well. You know, you're going to have to deal with some of the mental aspects of this. And the fact that he is getting off of Twitter and getting off of Facebook says to me that he has having trouble in the head, and that maybe it's more there than the legs. But then again, what do I know? I'm just glad to see him back. Michael Woods of Cannondale Dry Pack, I mean, he's poised, I think, to win a stage, just similar as he was to in the Giro, which he didn't get, but I think he got a fifth there one day, and it was very close. He might meet, going for a little more significant result though at this year's tour and the Vuelta. I think he can do that. I mean, if Cannondale Dry Pack gets another pony, that'd actually be crazy. I think his best bet is possibly top 10. If he got a top five, that would be amazing. And I don't think it's out of his realm. He's shown on some shorter, 7-day stage race type of things that he can be right in there. Bardet, Pozzovivo, and Nibali, they're all lost time today on a climb that I don't think should have caused them much trouble. Nibali, he mentioned after his win the other day how he's like, I'm not in great form, and so I'm not even peaking, and I still beat everybody. And it's kind of a little, I think it was a bluster for him to say those kind of things. And today I think he showed that he's just not quite there. Bardet, he podiumed, third at the Tour de France, so who knows his intent here at the Vuelta. I don't know that, AGTR, maybe they were going for Pozzovivo and he was here to simply support him, but then he crashed yesterday. So I don't know what their plans are. Aru, he didn't have a bad day, but he didn't have a great one either. I mean, 3 weeks is a long time, from the tour where he really put it out there and he was coming undone just near the end there. So he was in the yellow jersey for a while as well. So as I've stated daily, we never know what the intent is on some of these guys coming into the Vuelta, and he's, just one more guy. We're not really sure, but he lost out a little bit as well today. All right, stage 6 and 7 preview. When I first previewed the Vuelta, I stated there are only two stages, I said, over 200 kilometers, but they've since revised the route book, and now they're showing 4 stages at 200 kilometers or more. The first one we had over 200 kilometers was 203, and it was on stage 2. And then now the next 3 stages are going to be 3 successive 200 plus kilometer stages, 6, 7, and 8. You've got 204, 207 and 200 respectively. So it'll be interesting. You know, revising the route book, I guess I did that for the final climb. I had mentioned on yesterday's podcast that I'd find conflicting information on the final climb. And according to, the route book that the Vuelta actually puts out, it was very misleading. So teams had reconned it, said it was different. The Vuelta ends up changing some things. I guess that's what they do at the Vuelta. Okay, stage six, Villarreal to Sagunto, 204 kilometers. They're still racing down the Mediterranean coast, at least the start-finish towns are. And here the race is going to go inland a little bit, and you're going to have five category climbs of 3, 3, 3, 3, and 2. So they have a 2 kilometer. The first climb crests about 45 kilometers in, but it's a gradual kick up from about 13 kilometers. So from kilometer 13 up to 48, you're going to have just gradual climb with a Cat 3 going over there. The last Cat 2 climb starts at 158 kilometers in, and it lasts for around 10K. So they're going to crest that around 168 before dropping down. And then there's actually a sprint spot at kilometer 197 just before the finish at 204. So you've got inside the last 10 kilometers, a sprint spot and then the finish. So I don't know if this is going to be a sprinter stage. There's a lot of climbing going on here, and it might be a little, even though there's Cat 3s and Cat 2s, honestly, Matteo Trentin is just blowing everyone away when he's had a chance to sprint. I don't know if he's able to make it over these climbs. If he is, he's my bet for it. So honestly, I have no clue. Interesting side note about Sagunto. My nephew spent the last school year there, going to school in Spain, and had a fabulous time. He also went and saw over in France. I don't think he saw any of the tour, but he said bikes everywhere. So that's all I have for that. Okay, stage seven, Lira to Cuenca. I don't know how to pronounce this. C-U-E-N-C-A. Anyway, it's 207 kilometers. It's long. There's minimal categorized climbs. It's like three Cat 3 climbs. The profile of the race basically starts from around 200 meters in elevation, and then it heads up and it plateaus right around the 1,000 meter range, and then it just lumps all day. So this route takes us down, takes the field due west from the coast and a little slightly north inland. And then we have stages 8 and 9. Both of those look to be done right by the Vuelta. The weekend uphill finishes each day, which I like, especially on the weekends. Have some finishing climbs, some dramatic GC battles over the weekend. Stage 8 has a Cat 1 and then a 3 kilometer descent to the finish. So all but the last 3 kilometers are going to be finishing on the climb. And then stage 9 is just a true Cat 1 finish uphill and nothing more to that. That's what we have for today, and I hope you've enjoyed it. Other than that, take care and we'll see you on the road.